This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. Presented by Mosing Motor Cars. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
Welcome to the show, gearheads. Man, we are excited about tonight's show. We had some fantastic IndyCar racing today. It's going to be a blast to talk about.
What a way to start the season.
I know. And of course, we have the winner of today's race on the show, Sebastian Bourdais. We have him on in just a few minutes. And I'm going to get Jonathan to talk about that here in a second. And of course, Formula One testing, we're going to talk a lot about that because we had the second round of tests. And we're going to go down and talk about every team, the fastest laps they did, kind of do some ranking of the teams.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And we also got Les, we got Bud Moeller coming on the show.
Oh, man.
He was out there at Circuit of the Americas with some Ferraris out there having some fun.
It was Ferrari Challenge, yeah?
It was the Ferrari Challenge, which was a great event. You know, if you followed Speed City and some of the things we were talking about, this is the one that was free. You could park in Lot A, you could sit in the grandstands like the big folks do on Formula One weekend, but it was totally free.
Yeah, you spent the day out there. Well, that's John Massengill. That was Les Kaiser, and that's Jonathan Green. So. Yep. Jonathan, I want you to kind of introduce that you did an interview with Sebastian Bourdais about an hour ago, right after he got off the racetrack at Indy. So just introduce that story, because there's a lot more than just him winning the race.
Well, Sebastian Bourdais resides in St. Petersburg, Florida. That's where he lives. He's lived there for many years. He's a 4-time Indy champion. He will go down in history as one of the greatest Indy car drivers, and he's still going strong. But almost, well, less than a year ago, Sebastian Bourdais was involved in a horrific accident at over 227 miles an hour as he was going for pole position. And had he completed the lap, he would have had the pole for the Indy 500. Sadly, though, it didn't come because he went straight into turn two and shattered his pelvis. And it was an accident which, if you saw at the time, was very life-threatening, and we were absolutely on tenterhooks as to whether he would walk away.
I remember watching that.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there going, I'm not breathing because I'm watching that while it was happening. It was so intense.
The irony was Sato had a similar crash at the same corner in that qualifying session, and he went on to win the 500. Obviously, with a broken pelvis, a shattered pelvis, I may add, everybody thought, sadly, that Bourdais' career was over. But amazingly, and I was there that day, he came back on crutches into the garage on the day of the Indy 500 to thank, excuse me, I'm thinking about it. It was pretty impressive. And he came back in front of the team, thanked them all for being there. Obviously, he wasn't racing, but he was brave enough and strong enough to be there at the Indy 500 and witness it. Then got back in the car and amazingly completed part of the last season, 8 months after that accident. And today he's pretty much full circle because he now has won back-to-back wins at home at St. Petersburg because he won the first round before that crash and he's won again today. It was a very dramatic win and I spoke to him still in his overalls right after the race.
And we're going to play that interview in the next segment, but I also want to talk about what he said in that interview about being in the hospital and the nurse coming in and talking to him and just the feelings he had about all the what had just happened to him. So stay tuned because we're going to play that interview in the next segment. But I want to jump into Formula One, guys, in this first segment because we finished another day of testing in Formula One. 2 weeks from now, Formula One kicks off. And so I want to talk about the test because we had some exhibition of what might actually happen because, you know, the first test, the first week, everybody's just getting out there, making sure the cars can get around the track. But we started to see some speed. In fact, I want to talk about the fastest laps from everybody out there because a little bit surprising. And I know that they don't show all of their cards now.
Right.
But Les, you got the list in front of you. Who was the fastest? Was it Mercedes as expected?
Well, you know, by the end of Ferrari was out there.
Surprising a little bit.
And so,
a little, anyway.
You know, that was surprise, and there's a lot of debate. Did Ferrari make up the difference? Did Mercedes not improve over the winter? Things of that nature are going on. So there's some real interesting things. There's a great article. Check out F1.com for a great article comparing the 18 Mercedes versus the 18 Ferrari, the dimensional differences and things that they can share out of that. Pretty interesting stuff there. Really techie, though.
Yeah, and so the fastest lap for all of the winter testing was set by Sebastian Vettel, 117.1, and then right behind him at 117.2 was Kimi Raikkonen, and then Fernando Alonso at 117.7. So, I mean, obviously, I know Mercedes is probably sandbagging like everybody is to some degree.
Yeah, I don't think they are, actually, to be honest. I don't. In this day and age, there isn't time to sandbag, in my opinion. I think that we don't have the genuine... I mean, two weeks of testing does not make you up and ready, and you won't be ready by Australia. That's kind of the nature of the game. There is a completely new look to the cars. There are new rules. There's this halo. So this is probably one of the hardest years to get ready for Formula One in Australia. And so I don't even think the Australian Grand Prix will actually give us a true indication of necessarily who is going to win the title or dominate this year. And I actually don't think... what I've taken away from the test is I don't think anybody will dominate. I certainly don't think that Mercedes' advantage that they've had for several years now is still in place. I think Ferrari have, as they have done last year and have they done it again, have caught up. And I also think that Red Bull and McLaren will be factors. And I say and McLaren because now McLaren have the same equipment as Red Bull. And there's no reason that they shouldn't be where they used to be, which is at the sharp end. So, you know.
All right, well, you just named your top four. Well, who's number five?
Haas.
There you go. That's what I was hoping you would say. And you know what? I just read an article on Sky Sports. They said the same thing, which has got to be hard for the Brits to say that, right?
Now you know why he was choked up a little bit earlier.
Look, we're not that bad.
Hey, you know, we talked about some things with Kevin Magnussen last week. And, you know, he's really... showing he's a thinking man. You know, last week we talked about the view out from under the halo and how that may play into effect at Eau Rouge or even turn one.
Here at COTA, yeah.
Yeah. And here is, you know, here he is. He was the fifth spot. And the fact that Sky Sports will even acknowledge that.
Fifth fastest lap time of the entire winter testing was from Kevin Magnussen.
Absolutely, on Super Softs. So everybody before him was on Hyper Softs. And then you had Toro Rosso with Pierre Gasly was on Hypersofts behind him.
Did anybody try the Ridiculous Soft tire? I haven't seen that.
Ridiculously Soft?
I think actually, Grosjean tried the Abu Dhabi Dhabi, Yabba Dhabba Doo Soft. but no. What? I mean, Hypersoft, Supersoft, Ultrasoft. Is this moisturizer? It's so good for your skin. My Pirellis.
I right now, if you ask me to name the 9 levels of Pirelli softness of that, tires.
That, there's a competition there.
Yeah.
Anybody who can call in right now and give us
careful
all
what
9
you say.
So we'll get a free dinner with Les Kaiser.
But you're buying.
I mean, really, 9, do we really need? All right, whatever. So anyway, Les, your point was that Kevin Magnussen, obviously he had some controversy last year and some other drivers pissed off at him. But he set the 5th fastest time of the winter testing.
I like Kevin Magnussen.
Yeah, I do too. We've had him in the booth as well. He's a good, likable guy, very knowledgeable. I don't think he's really shown his personality for the TV cameras when we see him being interviewed. But I like him.
His dad, I remember covering his dad's era, was just as controversial. He was fast as furious. I mean, just brilliant driver in his day. I remember back in his Formula 3 days, I mean, Jan Magnussen was a force to be reckoned with. And he still is, of course, in IMSA. But there was no, he doesn't take prisoners, and nor does his son. He is a chip off the old block for sure, as is Carlos Sainz Jr.
Yeah. The, back to our color and tire compounds, I've got that chart for us. We're going to put up a color chart in the booth nowadays.
Okay, good.
Guys, yeah, because orange is hard. I don't know what we're going to relate that to. Medium is white. Soft is yellow. Super soft is red. I don't know about that.
I can sing a rainbow.
You can't sing, but yes. Ultra soft, purple. Then there's the mega soft, hyper soft, extreme soft, as they call it, and it's pink.
Well, of course.
So wait, extreme is more than hyper?
No.
It's softer?
It is one line item of mega soft / hyper soft / extreme soft is pink. Somewhere there's a joke there. Intermediate is green.
Several of them.
And wet is blue.
Can I do my South Texas? If you really want to know what they are, they're black and round.
Oh, man.
One hole in the middle.
That's right.
How about a hard tire, a soft tire, and a rain tire?
It would make sense, wouldn't it? It would be nice.
You know, I mean, quite honestly, I thought that when they came out, are we getting too crazy over these tires? Can we just knock it down to 3 or 4 of them, throw the intermediate, throw a wet in there, and go race, drivers?
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a medium. How about that? Hey, guys, I want to, before we go to the break and talk about IndyCar and that Alexander Rossi into, man, that was crazy. But I want to talk about Formula 2 and GP3 because we got some Americans in there.
Yes, we do. In fact, I've just spent 6 weeks with one of them, Juan Manuel Carrera. He's originally from Ecuador. Excuse me. He's originally from... I'm trying to think where he's from. Not Venezuela. Anyway, he's from South America, but he grew up in the U.S.
Down
in Florida,
yonder.
And in fact lives in Florida and has been a world kart champion in his day. Great guy. We've had him on the show. He's been in the Toyota Racing Series where he was pretty successful. He didn't win the whole series, but he had some race wins. He's doing GP3 this year. And, of course, Ryan Tavita, who we've had on the show many times, also another graduate from Toyota. Good Santino guy.
Ex-Carlin.
Santino Ferrucci, Tavita, of course. Ferrucci now still connected to the Haas team, and he'll be doing GP2. And, in fact, was literally plucked out of GP3 last year and then put in GP2. So much is the interest in this American kid. I think of those three... He's the most likely to make it quickly. And I tell you what, if you don't know anything about Santino, he's the real deal. He talks the talk and walks the walk and drives the drive. He is really on it. He's a really cheeky chap. He's fun to be with. We've had him in the commentary booth. He's a great commentator.
Yeah, he is.
But I think that, everybody's given... remember all the dialogue about Haas not picking an American, right, to be in Formula One? Well, Gunther Steiner's right. There isn't an American per se... that has a super license, and any one of Joseph Newgarden, Sebastian Bourdais already been a Formula One driver. Jordan King, now in Indy, was a Formula One driver. So, it's not a lack of talent, and I'm talking about the IndyCar series rather than Jordan King's obvious English, but what I'm getting at is there was a lot of controversy that Haas picked up because they said there wasn't any good Americans, and of course there are, but they don't have a super license, and they're racing here. Whereas Santino, like Alexander Rossi, went to Europe as a youngster and has learned his craft and has stayed in Europe and is now going through the ranks to make it to Formula One if he can.
Yep. All right, guys, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to finish that story that we talked about at the beginning of the show with Sebastian Bourdais and his pathway from that horrific crash. But we're also going to talk a lot about the Alexander Rossi and Robert Wickens. Man, he was leading the race in IndyCar and the way that ended up. And, of course, we're going to get Sebastian Bourdais' opinion on that. So stick with us through the break and listen to Speed City Live in Austin, Texas, back after these messages.
Augusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Augusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Augusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Mosing Motor Cars is Texas's only authorized dealer for Superformance products. Superformance's Mark III is the only Cobra replica built under license from Carroll Shelby. There's no finer example of a Cobra around. Mosing and Superformance is your supplier for all the great race cars of history. The GT40, the Mark III Cobra, the Corvette Grand Sport, and the Shelby Cobra Daytona Coupe. Mosing Motor Cars, 2420 West Breaker Lane, online at mosingmotorcars.com. Superformance and Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done, or where you've done it, or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
Hi, this is Michael Zweiback, driver of the number 2 discount tire Porsche. Welcome to Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
All right, at the top of the show, we talked about the IndyCar driver, Sebastian Bourdais, is going to be on the show here in just a second, and talking about the incredible race that was today. Before we jump right into that interview, just a second, though, Jonathan, talk about the, go ahead and set up this interview. Let's go ahead and play this, because it's really amazing, his story and everything.
Yeah, today was the first round of the IndyCar series for 2018, and it's always perennially in St. Petersburg, around the streets of St. Petersburg. All new cars for this season, new aero package. The car's running a lot closer. We won't really see the full extent of that until we get to an oval, which will be next at Phoenix. And I think it makes the Indy 500 even more mouthwatering, because basically the aero package has allowed you to race much closer, but also the cars have got less downforce, and so therefore we were really seeing the skills of the drivers on a basically street circuit. It's actually an airport as well, and that there was a lot of slippy paintwork, etc. Scott Dixon was caught out. The eventual race outcome was decided by a mistake between Robert Wickens, who was making his debut brilliantly, the Canadian. In Indy, led the most laps, but was taken out in the penultimate lap by Alexander Rossi in quite a controversial way, which has got a lot of feedback across the social media and on all the websites, and there are lots of opinions, but I think the best opinion of all is the man who was closest to it, and that, of course, is Sebastian Bourdais, because he was in third at the time of the restart and watch it all unfold. It was his first win after a hellacious crash at the Indy 500 qualifying last year, and it was at home in St. Petersburg. So I spoke to him, still in his overalls, straight after what was probably one of the most memorable victories of his career.
I am so, so happy. I'm still grinning from watching that race. So, so happy for you, my friend.
It was definitely not boring to watch, I'm sure.
Listen, last time we spoke, or last time I saw you, and I kind of want to take you back before we start talking about the race, was at the Indy 500, when you walked into the pits after coming out of hospital, in my mind, miraculously in some ways, but it was a very emotional day then. Today's very emotional. If you can, just start by saying, imagine that day before the Indy 500 and now today. Tell me about the journey.
Yeah, it has been, you know, quite a journey, and you know, obviously it was one thing, it was family in many different ways, and at the end of the day, this is what I do, this is my life, and you know, we kind of made it work and came back in the game 2.5 months later, and just pretty much like I said, and yeah, just went from there and eyes forward and prepared for 2018, and here we are in at the season opener in St. Pete at home, repeating the win from last year. So it doesn't get any better than that.
I was about to say, yeah, I'm sure family, friends, everything. I mean, it's just down the road from where you live. It must have been even more special, yeah?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you win in front of friends and family, and, you know, I really got embraced by the community, and they really make me feel, you know, their own, and to belong here. And, you know, it's just a great feeling. And at the end of the day, it's also the first time that Jimmy and Sully, the first race that they are with Delcon Racing and bringing some big name sponsors like Sailmaster, and, you know, every single one of the franchisees was here this weekend for their annual convention. They were here at the race in the suite, and you know, just kind of a daydream, really.
Tell me a little bit about the race, because like you say, it was packed with incident, and I guess we almost got more than we expected, but I think a lot of it perhaps was to do with the new car, the lack of comparative downforce from last year, the new aero package. First and foremost, how is the car to drive?
It's tough, man. It's definitely very lively. It's less forgiving, and in the meantime, it's a lot less turbulence when you're behind someone. I think that just kind of led guys to try and make stuff happen, and they really didn't wait. They didn't give it any time to try and figure it out. They all went for it. And when I saw how crazy the start was and all the subsequent restarts, I was like, man, this is chaos. So from there, I took the opposite approach. I really took the conservative, safe approach. The road kind of opened up in front of us once the race kind of settled in. And we went from there, but it was just absolutely stupid out there. There was so many incidents, and you know, I was just trying to, you know, hit my fuel number and go as fast as I could, stay out of trouble through all the ups and downs of the race and all the restarts and the yellows and whatnot. And all of a sudden, we're leading the race. We were mixing it up with the guys who are on a different strategy, and we look like we're going to finish third. And next thing you know, there's that last safety car 5 laps from the end or something, and it's just, oh really, how are we gonna do this? and yeah, I mean, it turned great for us. I mostly kind of secured my third place, and the next thing you know, the two guys are obviously fighting it off for the win, and they're going for the kill, and none of them made it. Really, really obviously disappointed for Robert, but you know, we'll take it, man.
Tell me about the incident, because you were right behind it. You got the best view of all. Obviously, Rossi was going for it. It makes sense. He had to make one go at it. But it was a place where it seemed that it was slippy all day or all weekend. Scott Dixon went round there. The paint on the inside was slippy. Is it something you were aware of?
No, it's been slippery the whole time, and I think it got even worse as the race went on, because obviously the paint rubbered up through the race online, and then the inside got, you know, significantly more slippery than the line. So, you know, I think, and it was at a restart where we were really all struggling with, you know, switching the tires back on and cleaning them off. And so, to be honest with you, that's why I was just kind of hanging back, because I really did not feel comfortable giving it a go, and I really didn't want to ruin the result. So when I saw them both going for it, I was like, well, that's going to probably be ugly, and I'm just going to try and be no part of it. And I got my, you know, wish, coming true. So couldn't ask for anything any better, to be honest.
I mean, I understand your conservative strategy given the race, but you also were in a position with five laps to go with a lot more push to pass than the two guys in front of you. Was there a thought with you and your engineer that you might sort of go, okay, I got some push to pass here. I'm going to try in the last couple of laps anyway.
Yeah, but not at the restart, because at the restart you can't use the push to pass anyway.
Right.
It's not allowed anymore until that very last one. So yeah, it really wasn't that much of a factor. And like I said, I mean, sometimes to try and secure third place, which was kind of a bit of a miracle, was fine. And you know, sometimes when you the enemy of good is better. So you know, I was going to settle for good, and I got better. So I'll take it.
Listen, before the race, you told the reporters, you know, you felt 100% fit, and you look it, obviously. But you've had probably one of the most grueling tests you could possibly have today, with all the restarts, with all the, you know, drama. How do you feel in terms of your physical status?
Yeah, pretty good. I got blisters on both hands, but that's got nothing to do with with my physical status. No, I felt really fine in the car. So no, it's all good, and that's rock and roll. Roll the next one.
Exactly. So on to Phoenix next. What are you feeling? I mean, obviously this is the perfect start, and it could have gone differently, but you would have still had a third place out of the race results. So are you and the team, your engineer, the package, do you feel that you guys have got to grips with it and you're ready to go? I mean, it's an oval next, so it's very different.
Yeah, I don't think we had it quite perfect for Phoenix. I think we had speed for one lap on the race. I think we're definitely missing grip, so I know the guys are thinking long and hard about, you know, what we're going to go back with, so it's still to be determined. But you know, as far as the strict course package is concerned, we gave it our first go this weekend. I think we're looking for about two or three tenths to really get there and get the balance dialed in. Didn't quite go through all the stuff that we want to go through, but you know, we'll keep trying to learn through the season, and hopefully keep on getting it better.
And Seb, just for our audience, I mean, you're new to Speed City, but we've got a good following. Just remind people, because you were in an horrific accident before the 500. Tell us what happened, what you injured, and the fact that you've managed to kind of effectively rehabilitate to today.
Yeah, it was a really nasty crash, obviously, on the Saturday of qualifying. And in the third lap, we're full mile an hour faster on the first two than the opposition. We're going to take pole on that fast nine. And unfortunately, you know, things got sideways. I got a little wiggle in turn one, which I didn't really think much of it because that was the first of the whole week. And then got in turn two, and the thing got away from me, and I hit the wall at 227, which was not too bad an angle, which probably saved my life as much as the ounce device and the safer wall. But it was a nasty crash, and ended up with a broken pelvis, broken hip, and broken femur, some ribs and stuff. So it wasn't very good, but you know, everything healed up very nicely, and I was back in the car 2.5 months later. So. Like we said, it was quite a journey, but you know, very happy with the way things turned out, and very happy that obviously I didn't hang up the helmet, because that was never a consideration. But that's what some people were thinking that was going to happen.
I seem to remember one of the nurses was like, "Right, get up, Sebastian. Let's get you walking. As soon as the operation was over, let's get you out of bed." So I bet you're pretty thankful that she did all that. Yeah.
I don't know about that. I mean, on that Sunday morning, the hospital, when I was still in ICU, I wasn't too impressed with the nurse with the physio coming to me and saying, "All right, let's get up now." I'm like, "Really?" I'm looking at my leg, and I'm like, "I'm fine. You know, I think you're in the wrong room." She's like, "No, we're getting you up right now." I'm like, "Oh, geez, come on. It's not even been 12 hours." But yeah, it was quite intense, and you know, it also puts your I guess your motivation to the test, and you know, I'm glad we didn't leave anything on the side.
Well, Seb, I know you're tired. You've done a lot of interviews, but just final thoughts. What does this mean to you and Dale Coyne's racing operation? Because it is a dream come true to be able to do it at home and at the start of the season, and basically tell the world that you're back.
No, I mean, it means a lot. Obviously, the community really embraced me, and I really try and give as much back as possible, and they really make me feel that I belong, and it's awesome, to win at home and be able to get out of here with the championship lead is no joke, and like we said, this is the first race with Soli and Jimmy joining Dale on the marketing and commercial side, bringing some big name sponsors, so really an awesome way to start the relationship and the season.
Well, listen, thanks for talking to us, Seb. As you would say, merci beaucoup et bonne chance pour the rest of the season. So happy for you today. Well done, mate.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, amazing comeback, amazing win. Really incredible race today with all that. So there's
great,
a lot.
Great story for him.
Yeah, there's a lot more to talk about this. I want to get both of y'all's take on this, on the win and, of course, the crash with Rossi and Wickens.
Yeah, but, I'm going to say the other big story is that Wickens really should have won the race in his debut.
In his debut, yeah. Well, there's a lot more to talk about this, but up next, we're going to take a little break from IndyCar because we got a gentleman who's called in and we're going to talk to him in just a minute. We got Bud Moeller who's going to join us and talk about his 2003 F1 car that he took out on Coda today with the rest of the Ferrari
team. Fun little play toy.
Yeah, all right. You're listening to Speed City live in Austin. We'll be back after these messages.
The racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road.
Dirtfish Rally School is the nation's most prestigious driving school, offering 7 days a week, year-round driver education from 15-year-olds with no driving experience to amateur racers and professional drivers. Our professional instructors never judge a student based on who they are, where they're from, or their driving background. We'll keep you and your family safe, on the road, or better, at the racetrack. Feel confident behind the wheel, no matter the situation, no matter what you've done, or where you've done it, or how well you've done it. We'll make you better.
Hi, I'm JD Beach, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
I look around the studio and watch everybody when JD Beach comes on.
Yeah, Jiggy Dog.
You can't help but have a huge smile when you have JD Beach.
He's great.
All right, Les, I want you to introduce our next guest because I know you and Bud go back a ways.
Hey, we do. I got to say, Bud was one of our first guests with Speed City 6 years ago. When Circuit Americas was still in dirt, just about.
Still in diapers?
Just about. It's been great. Bud is a great guy to know as far as just knowing about the history of F1. He doesn't just preach Formula One. He doesn't preserve the history of it. He races it. Bud, welcome back to Speed City.
Great to be back with you guys.
Hey, so...
great to have you, bud.
You had a great weekend out, and I was out for the Ferrari Challenge, picking up on that, and having a great time. There's a whole collective group, I don't know what to call it, audience that races. I mean, these are race fans and racers themselves getting out there. Can you give us a little nutshell of what this weekend is like, and who are those people out there?
Sure. Ferrari does a group of events in multiple countries that are focused on primarily gentlemen drivers is probably the best way to put it. And I think with the people that race in my group, at least, I would certainly call them gentlemen. but the thing that attracts, I think, the most attention and as a full race series is the 488 Challenge. Mm. And those guys, I think they had something like 50 cars across multiple groups this weekend at COTA. And some are amateur, some are in the professional category, some are driving slightly older cars. And they all get out there and unfortunately pound some of that beautiful Ferrari machinery into bits and pieces that need to be repaired. But it's always great to watch them. It's kind of, if you can imagine the blend between NASCAR and haute couture, you end up with Ferrari challenge.
That is perfect.
Yeah, it's not always pretty, I'll say, but it is a great weekend of racing. You know, this is one Speed City was promoting. It was free to attend. You park in lot A, you sit in the grandstands and look across to the paddock and the garage lanes there. And it is absolutely phenomenal. And you had things everywhere from the, I saw 458s out there. I saw 488s. I saw the fantastic new FXX class. Huh. And even so, there was an FXXK. Is that correct, bud?
Yes. So now you're starting to move towards my end of the garage. We have what are called these XX cars. They are theoretically, they're sort of experimental vehicles. They took two Ferrari supercars, the Enzo and now more recently the LaFerrari, and cranked them up into being great race cars with, you know, slicks and wings and big diffusers and traction control and all kinds of cool things. So in that LaFerrari racing version called the FXXK, it's over 1,000 horsepower because it's a hybrid with an 800 and something horsepower motor and another 150 to 200 in electric motors on the wheels. So those guys are really, you know, that kind of state-of-the-art technology. And then the original one in that XX program was the Enzo, and they turned that into a race car, and it still goes pretty well around there.
So, Bud, what you're telling us is that you take probably the greatest road car that you can buy right now and turn the knob up even to 11.
To 11. There you go.
Yep, it's Spinal Tap all over, right? Yeah, I mean, I always talk about these being their supercars on steroids because it is more power, more grip, more everything. And in the middle of those two is the 599XX, which was based on the GTO.
Wow. I got asked a question. I've been watching Ferrari Challenge for a long time. And of course, the Ferrari Challenges around the world, there's a lot of them. But I always think to myself, I know you guys can afford your cars, but is there a little bit of annoyance when somebody is just not as polite as they possibly can, given that you're risking a fair amount of bodywork damage and a fair amount of bills if this guy doesn't drive very well? Do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. And that's, you know, I mean, Ferrari have wanted me to get into the Challenge series on and off for 20 years, and I've always refused because it is a bit of a variable field. You've got some people who are brand new to racing and others who have, you know, been out there for a while and they're trying to get somebody to notice them. And unfortunately, you know, crashing is not a great way to get noticed. But I was talking to one of the guys who drove in the series today, and he said, you always have to remember two rules. Rule number one is when you're coming up to pass somebody, assume they don't see you. And rule number two is when you get up next to them, assume they're trying to kill you.
That's wise. That's kind of like the... Yeah, you know, that's why I taught my daughters to ride motorcycles on the street.
Yeah, that's a good
expect
point.
Them to kill you. So, well, fantastic. But I got to highlight one thing. So, you know, yes, I loved all those that we've just spoken about. But the highlight of the weekend for me was standing out on wall and seeing Bud blow by in a 2003 F1 car.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Yeah.
Yep. Powered with that screaming 18,000 RPM V10.
Oh, man.
That makes the Formula One noise that we all love and miss.
Yes. Could you record it for us and we can play it on the show once a week?
I think I've got it.
Okay, good.
Les may have it. There are so many people hanging out over the pit wall. You know, there's no room for the guys to put out a pit board if I have trouble there because there's so many people with their cameras. But, yeah, I mean, having this, you know, absolutely fantastic Formula One car at this track, COTA, was my dream come true. I've driven COTA, I don't know, a half a dozen times in support races to the Formula One weekend, but we've never had this car out until this weekend, so it was really phenomenal.
But I got to ask you, what's it like? I mean, I'm giddy just listening to you driving a Formula One car, and how loud is it when you're right behind or your head is right in front of that engine?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been driving F1 cars for about 25 years. I started in some older ones from the 70s and 80s and still actually run those in a racing series in North America. And again, we're usually supporting the different Grand Prix and we're at big vintage events. But the 03 car probably turns a lap about 15 to 20 seconds faster than the older F1 cars. And as you can imagine, in racing, 20 seconds is an eternity.
Yeah.
But you got to realize, what's changed since 03? Tires, well, lubricants,
yeah,
all of that. And
yeah,
so,
good point.
You know, he's right. You can turn a lap faster now in that 03 car than they did in 03.
Wow.
And not even be pushing as hard anymore. And so gosh, the lap times are amazing. But I'm going to pause right here and get Casey to run this quick little sound for us. And we're just going to reminisce back to 2003.
Ooh.
So there you go.
And that was today?
That was yesterday. I was out there. That was Bud and some of his friends making some haste around that track.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the high pitch one was probably me. That lower pitch one might have been the V8 car.
Yeah.
Which still turns good number of teens RPM, but just doesn't quite make that same scream.
Hey, Bud, I know that you, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you got my interest piqued about lap times in that car out of COTA. Can you talk about that?
I can, and unfortunately, we had cool temps on the first day, Friday. Saturday was so hot, we didn't get to make as much power out of the engine as we wanted. And today was super windy and cold, so
yeah,
didn't do quite so well. But I think the best time we turned yesterday, was 147.
Holy,
whoa, that's good.
I mean, what's last year, what was it, 137?
134, I think, is what Hamilton's doing, so, wow.
But don't forget that the 134 includes the DRS wing and the boost.
Yep.
And, you know, they've got a lot of aids, as you said, with technology and things that have been added on. But the important thing to note is that until 2017, when they widened the tires, increased the aero, those cars did not lap faster than the 2003 and 2004 Ferraris. So
yeah,
it's taken them almost 15 years to come back to the levels that they used to be at.
What about the speed on the back straight, Bud?
You know, I never got a chance to take a look at my telemetry, but we were definitely
too busy focusing.
I'm a little busy back there. But we were definitely in the high end in seventh gear, so I'm guessing probably close to 200 before we break the back straight.
Wow, that's
but
amazing.
More impressive than that is we break at the 80-meter mark.
Wow.
It's where you can actually start to see the dirt marks on the orange berm there in the center, and all of a sudden you're slamming the brakes and making the turn. So it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, see the bolts in the fence on the other side. That's time to hit the brakes.
Or as the great Kevin Schwantz, our local hero, motorcycle racer, used to say, see God and back off.
Yeah, exactly.
But guys,
you know, just to put this car in perspective, you know, we have had this big Ferrari program come to the U.S. several times. And at every single track until this year at COTA, we have broken the track record with my car.
Wow.
Well, your car is really special. I haven't even said anything about the background of it, but go back to 2003 and give us a little history of this car.
Yeah, this was driven by Rubens Barrichello. As you remember, back in that era,
wow,
Schumacher won championships 5 years in a row, and Rubens was, you know, the good guy soldiering behind. So the car has no wins, but it did race in five of the Grands Prix in 2003, including Monaco and Spain and a couple of others. So it's got some good races and good finishes on it, but it is identical to the car of the day. It is the exact car. Engine and transmission have been rebuilt, but everything else, bodywork and everything, is absolutely original.
But this is so amazing that you're going to allow your favorite radio host to drive this car. I mean, I really
can't
wait to get out
so
there.
So generous of me.
Yeah.
Isn't that?
You can't fit. So obviously that knocks it back to me. Thanks. But this is such a cool series. And you know, I've heard you say it's the fastest museum on the track, 200-mile-per-hour racing museum in action. And that's what I love about it. It's not behind velvet ropes or anything. Well, Bud Moe, you're headed to Georgia next week. Isn't that correct?
Yep, we're off to Road Atlanta in a few more days. And the show goes there, not the Challenge guys. They're off on a different schedule. But we and the XX cars will all be there just doing test days and pounding out the laps. The interesting thing about Road Atlanta is I think neither F1 nor Indy has ever been there. The fastest lap is held by an LMP1, and already our driving coach, Mark Genet, has said to me and one other guy that one of the two of us is probably going to come away with a lap record there this coming week. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know, not a bad driving coach.
That would make sense because, you know, here at COTA, I think the LMP1 cars are about 10 seconds off the F1 car. So probably in that 147-ish range. So I bet it's pretty similar too. I mean, and think about the technology that's in an LMP1 car and that your car is as fast as one of those. That's crazy.
Yeah, and especially given that mine's just an old horse, you know.
Yeah.
I got one question for you, Bud, and I've always been intrigued by this. What's the hardest thing when you're dealing with effectively a vintage Formula One car? What's the hardest thing part-wise to maintain or actually get your hands on? Because obviously that car was built in Italy, and I just wonder, you know, where do you get your parts?
Well, the good news is because the Ferrari factory runs this series, they provide all the mechanics, and those guys have all of the forms and, you know, drawings and spare parts, you know, to some degree for these cars. And they will either, you know, find it or make it to be able to put the cars back together. It's not cheap, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, they do their best to maintain the cars because we essentially are brand ambassadors. I mean, we go out there, we run these demo laps, break track records. The brand gets a great uplift. The crowds love it. They never get to see F1 cars in real life. And here, you know, we actually let some people come and sit in them and take pictures. So it's fabulous for the fans, fabulous for the brand. And for Ferrari, these guys, I have a dozen guys that take care of my car when I'm there. Those are apprentices, and the best of them are going to move up to the traveling F1 team.
Well, that's cool.
And the guys that get burned out from that come out, and they're the masters that are training the apprentices. Ferrari would have to do that anyway, so they subsidize this to some degree because we're a training platform for their guys. So I think everybody wins.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. I never would have imagined, yeah.
Yeah, what a great way to, you know, teach the young guys and let the old guys share their knowledge. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, every year I have a crew chief who's the same throughout all, you know, 8 to 10 events. And the younger guys rotate around every single year. I never see two of them, you know, 2 years in a row. They're all off to something else, either in the factory or with the F1 team. So it's, you know, it's a great experience for them and super fabulous for us as well.
Well, fantastic. Again, we're talking about the Ferrari Challenge that took place this weekend. Great collection of Ferraris, especially the historics. And be sure and keep an eye out. Speed City will let you know when they come around again. Bud Moeller, travel safe, and thanks again for a great entertainment value this weekend out at Circuit of the Americas and certainly joining us here.
Well, my pleasure as always, and hope we'll catch up again sometime down the road.
Absolutely. Have a great season, Bud.
Thanks a lot, Bud.
Travel safe, buddy.
Fabulous. Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye. You know, it's unusual for anybody to share lap times, and I was really surprised. I thought he was going to say like close to 2 minutes.
Yeah,
so I'm surprised. But
what a great guy.
Yeah, what a great guy. All right, guys, we are going to take a break. I hear the music, so let's do that. So when we come back, we're going to finish that conversation that we started about IndyCar because that's too interesting to happen today to talk some more about. And what else, Jonathan?
And text us if you think it was Wiccan's fault or Rossi's fault.
Yeah, there you go. Text us in. You can actually text us at 512-643-5483. No, that's the call-in line. You can call us at that line or tweet at us.
Free dinner with Les.
All right, we'll be back after these short messages. Listen to Speed City live in Austin.
Augusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Augusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Augusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available.
to Caddy Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Mosing Motor Cars is Central Texas's source for classic performance cars. British, German, Italian, Japanese, and American. Ready for that special car you've always dreamed of? Mosing has you covered. Looking to sell a classic? Let Mosing handle all the details and get that special vehicle in the hands of the right buyer. Visit the showroom at 2420 West Breaker Lane or call 512-821-9491 or browse the garage online at mosingmotorcars.com. Mosing Motor Cars. Drive yourself happy.
You have made the right choice. Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, presented by Mosing Motor Cars.
All right, I want to go back to the IndyCar race today in St. Pete, because if you're out there on social media, Alexander Rossi, I would say, just my quick anecdotal, I do not have a social media tool to tell me this, but my quick anecdotal look says it's about 70-30, saying Rossi should not have done it, and there's been pretty strong words out there. I mean, I want to get first, let's start with you. Let's get your take. What do you think?
All righty. Well, okay, my thoughts are, if I'm back there in Rossi's spot, and I'm positioned where he was, the way he was, and you see that gap open up on the inside of the turn, because you saw him do a little defensive move. Rossi made the second move, pulled up next, was closing in to be up next to him. By the time they got to the turn-in point, Rossi was inside. I'm going to say it became posturing or kind of defensive to have them both go in at the same time, where the leader got tagged and knocked out. I think that the leader should have known he was there at that time. He had earned his spot to be there by his side, and they were heading in. Rossi was too fast, wasn't going to make it, keeping his tires against the apex and all the way through the exit of that turn. But, you know, the paint on the track, which we all knew was there, we saw issues with it throughout the day, is what caused Rossi to slide so extremely and lose his line through that curve. I would have done it. Is it Rossi's fault it happened? Yeah, it is. But I would have done the same thing, hoping that the guy I'm about to pass is going to chicken out a little ways and give some way.
Yeah, and how many drivers do you guys think would have gone for it? I mean,
most of them.
Under those circumstances, absolutely. Having said that, you heard what Sebastian Bourdais said, which is why he's got four titles. And I don't mean that like Rossi shouldn't have gone for it, but he said in the own interview, he was right there. He knew how slippy it was. Now, Rossi has come out and said, and on the IndyCar.com site, you know, look, he squeezed me, you know, onto the marbles. And he didn't lock up because he said, was your goose, one of the reporters said, was your goose cooked? And he said, no, it was very rare. He said, in other words, I was in full control of the car. So it's one of those racing incidents. I don't blame Rossi. Of course, he went for it. But you hear Sebastian saying conservativeness says don't do it because it'll end in tears. And it did.
Right.
My heart goes out to Robert Wickens. And I'm sure we know Alexander. Worst. He's a great friend of the show.
Wickens earned the win.
He's not a dirty driver. And he's certainly not, you know, would not have wished that on anyone. So.
Yeah, and I'll read Alexander Rossi's tweet today. He says, proud of our podium today, thankful to my team. He says, Robert Wickens had a fantastic day, and he's absolutely the real deal. But I'm a racer, and I went for the win. So in conclusion, hashtag caution lights, hashtag push to pass, hashtag marbles.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, admittedly, Sebastian Bourdais talking about, he has the best seat in the house, but he was talking about, he saw what was going on, and it was about to be mayhem, but...
Well, the truth is, Rossi got away with it.
Yeah.
He did get through.
He got through.
And got third.
And without a penalty from IndyCar.
Interestingly enough, Dixon was given a penalty for the same kind of spin and taking Sato out, but he didn't get penalized. So, you know, watch off this.
Well, the internet will continue to scream, yell, and debate, but I think... one thing's for sure, made for some great entertainment for the rest of us.
To be honest, the whole day.
Even if they hadn't, taken him out, it would have been a great race just watching that last lap come to. And okay, here's one last thing I'll throw in on that last lap. I want a yellow, green, 2-1 finish. I don't want any more of these finishes under yellow flags. I want to race at least 2 laps under green to finish a race.
Like NASCAR, yeah. I agree.
I really like that rule. NASCAR got that right.
Yeah. Well, talking about getting it right, you know, I've been following Indy now for many years, and Indy's had a rocky past in terms of when the championship split, and everybody's, you know, and we've had the celebrations of the 100th running of the 500. I think that Indy is genuinely back. Young stars, ex-Formula One guys like Rossi and Jordan King coming in, Carlin with their own team, one of the best racing teams in the world. Again, another Max Chilton, another F1 guy. You've got Sato, you've got Dixon, who's still at the height of his powers. Robert Wickens, who's done it all, a factory DTM driver, coming to race here in Indy, and a bunch of youngsters on the way up and coming from IndyCar Lights, or Indy Lights. And so it really is back. They've got a great car, a great package, and I think the car looks fantastic. It's back.
Yeah, speaking of Indy Lights, we had Shelby Blackstock was in second.
Colton Herta.
But who won the race, though? It was the gentleman who's in the booth with us last year at Formula One. Kyle Kirkwood. That was pretty cool, too. So that was good to see. But
see, folks, there's another chance. If we tell you to follow somebody young, better do it.
Yeah, well, Kirkwood was great in the booth, man. We had him at the Formula One race when we were calling the play-by-play here on KJCE, and it was that last pass that Max Verstappen did that he got to call that. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was fun, kind of cool, wasn't it?
Well, we're about out of time, but I definitely want to talk about Formula One some more because stay tuned to Speed City because we're going to be ramping up our Formula One coverage. We got some things that we're going to be.
Or did you say and Haas?
We're going to be announcing that some things that we're going to be doing to ramp up our Formula One coverage, and it's going to be
more
really,
than you've
really,
ever had.
Yep. It's going to be really
exactly.
That didn't sound like a Formula One car, though.
Yeah.
But actually dropped a cylinder.
Yeah, that was the 8-cylinder minus 3.
So yeah, stay tuned. But of course,
Australia 2 weeks time, yep. And MotoGP next week.
That's right. MotoGP starts next week and Formula One in 2 weeks on the 25th.
And we're going to have Kevin Schwantz here in the studio, I hope, if I can get him in. But that's the plan.
Next
weekend, World
Kevin
Champion.
Schwantz, yep. In studio, yeah. Yep.
He'll be also down at, there's a watch party at the Circuit of the Americas. So if you want to go see MotoGP live, get down there. Looking forward to it.
All right, boys. Well, we're just about out of time. Of course, stay tuned to... What do you got, Les? One more story?
Oh, no. I was just going to say thanks again, Bud Moeller, history lesson. Great weekend with the Ferrari family out. Always enjoyed those invitations out there. Y'all follow up with them, too.
And thanks to Sebastian Bourdais. All right. Well, thanks for tuning into Speed City. Check us out on our website, of course, speedcitybroadcast.com, our Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud. And, of course, next Sunday night, as usual, 7 o'clock right here, Speed City. Talk to you next week.
Happy trails.
Ciao, y'all.
Garrett Gerloff, I ride the number 31 Yamaha Graves Yamaha, and you're listening to Speed City.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.